You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Parmenio Iglesias. Parmenio, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm welcome. Glad to be here.
Parmenio, let's start from the beginning here. Where were you born and what year?
I was born in Cuba in 1937.
When did you come to the United States? What year?
I came to the United States in May of 1956.
And what was the main reason that you enlisted in the U.S. Air Force?
I wanted to come to the United States, and then I had to go to the American Embassy in Havana to secure a visa to come to the United States. And I did so, and while in the embassy there, I was interviewed and so forth. Over there, I had to sign a paper that I was going to join, at least be recruited in the United States military within 6 months after I arrived in the United States. And they gave me the visa. I came to New York City, and I did. 6 months later, before that, I went ahead and I joined the military. I applied to join the Air Force.
In order for you to become a citizen here in the United States, they required that you served in the military.
Oh, yes, that is correct. And in order for me to have my visa.
What did you do in the Air Force? What was your job?
I was classified as an administrative specialist. I did administrative work. I worked with various offices in the Air Force, base finance, and many other places that my duties were required for my skills.
You were at one point then stationed in Japan.
That is correct.
While you were in Japan, you met a Japanese national and you became intimate with her. And at the same time that this was occurring, being stationed in Japan and having a relationship with a Japanese national, you were approached by members of the U.S. Air Force regarding a certain matter. What was that about?
Okay, at that time, we're talking about 1959, I was in Japan for about a year now by this time, and at that time, Fidel Castro came to power in Cuba. He had come to power in January of 1959, so maybe even 6-7 months after that, I was approached by two individuals on base. They were dressed in civilian clothing, they were wearing nice suits with ties and all that, and they started to interview me, and they told me that I could be a great help in the fight to get rid of Castro in Cuba. Just listen to what they said and so forth, but basically I ignore them. I just ignore them. That's what I did.
You were at that time how old?
At that time I was 22 years old.
Of course, all of this stuff that we're going to be talking about, and we have talked about, this is going to be revealed in much greater detail in your book that should be out next year in 2014. But at the time, the United States Air Force didn't want to give you permission to do what?
Well, they didn't want to give me permission to marry a Japanese national because they said that I was not a U.S. citizen and I was a Cuban citizen, and they wouldn't give me permission to marry her, although she was about 6 months pregnant at the time. So I couldn't figure out if I was an airman in the United States Air Force, why they couldn't give me permission to marry when so many other guys that were in Japan there, they got married with Japanese nationals, but they wouldn't give it to me for that.
The story of what happened to her and to you and to your son is incredible. Basically, to sum it up, when she was expected to give birth to your son, the hospital that they finally allowed her to go into, and of course this is in Japan, all this happened in Japan, none of the hospital staff actually came to help her deliver your son. Is that right?
Well, yeah, this was after I had learned that they finally allowed me to get married. So then I had the privilege of having her to take her to the base hospital because I was a military man and she had the right to go there to give birth to a child. I was already married to her at the time. But anyway, the thing what happened was that as I learned, I took her to the hospital. She was, you know, just in pain to have the baby. And I took her to the emergency room there and they put her in one of the hospital beds there to have the baby. So then I fell outside. So finally, after a while, quite a while it was, this woman came, another Japanese woman there that was a janitor in the hospital there, and it was cleaning the room, came and told me that the baby was born, and then she explained to me, you know, that there was a boy and so forth. So then when I talked to my wife, she told me that she was very sick, she was bleeding a lot, and she told me that there wasn't one doctor or even a nurse that took care of her during the time that she was delivering the baby. And that this woman, which was a janitor there, another Japanese woman who could hardly speak much English either, helped her to deliver the baby. No doctor, no nurse, no nothing, no American doctor, no American nurse, nobody in the hospital helped her to have the baby. She was thrown in there in a room like a dog to have the baby by herself. That was done by the American people, by the U.S. Air Force medical personnel at that particular military Air Force base in Japan, believe it or not.
I believe it, of course, but again, it's incredible. So this was in January of 1960, and then eventually you had made your way to the United States. You were transferred to a base in Ohio from the beginning of 1960 until, let's fast forward here, to October of 1962, specifically October 14th. of 1962. That was the beginning of what's popularly referred to as the Cuban Missile Crisis, also known as October Crisis. The October Crisis, of course, that was the naval blockade of Cuba by the United States, which ended in November of 1962. But it began October 14th of 1962, and it ran till October 28th of 1962. As you mentioned earlier, in Japan, the Air Force had attempted to get you involved in some kind of a scheme to overthrow Castro, and folks, if they're familiar with Operation Northwoods, asking you to murder American service members in order to blame it on Castro, and this is a false flag operation.
Well, they learned that the operation was that they wanted to have some people, probably Cubans, to dress in military uniforms, Castro military uniforms, and be taken to Cuba in secret and go to the Guantanamo base in Cuba, which is an American military Navy base, and there we're going to sacrifice, that's the way they say sacrifice, whatever you think that means, sacrifice a few sailors. Okay, once we sacrifice those few sailors, we'll be taken out and we'll be taken away from the area. And then they would tell the world that the Navy base in Guantanamo has been attacked by Castro forces because we were going to be dressed in military uniform, Castro military uniform. Then the United States would have the right to go and attack Cuba, invade Cuba, which that's what they wanted to do from the beginning.
You know? Right. And then let's fast forward now to October 24th, 1962. Tell the listeners where you were on that date at that time and what exactly happened to you.
On October 24, 1962, I was at my duty station. I was working in my office there, and two agents from the OSI, the United States Office of Special Investigation, Air Force, they appeared at my office there where I was with a policeman, with an Air Force policeman at the time, and they told me to accompany them to the office of the OSI office. And when I got out, they put handcuffs on me, and they said what I had been charged. They were charged against me, and I was going to be questioned. So they took me to the base guardhouse where they kept the prisoners there and put me behind bars there. And there my ordeal started right there. They started the interrogation on me. The first day of interrogation lasted about 16 hours because to the weird hours in the morning, during that time I was given no food, nothing, just water and milk. That was all I was given because they classified me as a maximum security prisoner. And they said they don't give meals and things to maximum security prisoners like me. And this continued for the next 4 days until the 27th. And the same treatment, the same thing, no food, no nothing. They stripped me down. I was naked. Only they gave me a robe to put on me, but I was naked. I mean, my uniform was taken away from me, my wallet, everything was just taken away from me. So they continued interrogating me, teams of OSI agents, asking me a bunch of stupid questions about myself, about my family, about everything you can think of. One of the interrogations was, why was I light skin? I had light skin, white. I was white, blue eyes, and also blonde when I was a Cuban. I claimed to be a Cuban. You know, they probably thought that I had infiltrated the Air Force, that I was some kind of a Russian or somebody else. German, whatever, infiltrating the Air Force coming from Cuba. And they had some people that they brought some guy in there that spoke to me in a strange language. And I figured maybe it was Russian, maybe it was German, I don't know. But I couldn't understand a word anyway because I only spoke Spanish and a little bit of English that I had learned while I was in the Air Force yet.
Mm-hmm. So, for 4 days and three nights, they didn't give you any food. They only gave you milk and water. They most likely gave you LSD because they did something to you that made you feel like you were a giant, that you could break through the walls. They also didn't let you sleep. And how was it that they didn't let you sleep?
During the time that I was there, those 4 nights, the cell where I was by myself there, they had very heavy steel bars on the outside, and they had those guards to come in with a club, and they would hit the bars. They go from side to side over the bars, back and forth there, and nobody could sleep with that. I couldn't sleep with that anyway. They were doing it to me because I was isolated. That went on for 4 days, but I could not sleep, and I was given no food, no sleep. I started to feel real bad because, I was already sick 4 days without sleeping. So then the OSI said, okay, well, we're going to give you something for that. So they went and they gave me some pills. I drank with a glass of milk. And after that, I got real, real sick. I mean, but I never felt in my life before the way I was feeling.
What happened after they tortured you for 4 days and three nights? What did they do with you next?
So I was so sick. So they finally decided maybe they thought I was going to die there or something, the way I was acting up. So they took me to the base, Blackburn Air Force Base. They took me to the base hospital, to the emergency room, I think it was, somewhere, and they took me there. The doctor on duty that night, he was a captain by the name of Captain Tipton, and he knew me from the VOQ where I worked. And he saw that I was very sick, very ill. He said, I have to admit this man to the hospital. He's going to be admitted to the hospital because of the condition that he is. Well, before that, he also had warned me not to say a word to the doctor, to the nurse, to anybody about where I came from, that I've been detained, I was in jail. They forbid me from saying anything, or they said I would pay the consequence if I did tell the doctor anything about it. So I didn't dare to tell the doctor anything. But when I was there, I told the doctor something. I told her that I wanted to talk to the chaplain. I want to talk to somebody, okay? And they shut me up. The doctor started arguing with them, and they argued back with the doctor, and it was a big mess there in the room that we were. So finally, the doctor said, well, I'm going to admit him to the hospital. So then they didn't allow the doctor to admit me to the hospital. They took me 65 or 70 miles away from there to another base called Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. They took me there because so they wanted to keep me on a locked ward. At that base, they did not have a ward where they could lock me up. So since I knew the captain that took care of me, so I guess they didn't want to have me there because they might feel that I maybe haven't talked to him or something. So they took me to another strange base where I didn't know anybody. They put me there in a locked ward. Again, they wanted me not to tell the doctors over there, the nurse, anything about it, where I came from, where they had me, that I've been in jail for 4 days, that they gave me these pills and nothing. I could say nothing to them whatsoever.
During this time that you were in a locked psychiatric ward, you went through the 4 days and three nights of torture at the hands of our own government here in the United States. Then they interrogated you for the 2.5 months you were locked. At that time, what did they tell your wife who was home, your Japanese-born wife who could barely speak English, home with your 2.5-year-old and 4-month-old sons? What did they tell her? What did they tell her where you were?
They told me we have 2 agents in your house right now. They want to talk to your wife. What I did not know was they had told my wife that I had deserted her and I had gone to Cuba. I left for Cuba. He's in Cuba now, and he deserted you and the children. And they told the same thing to people that I knew, my neighbors that I knew me in that apartment building. They told that to everybody. They told to my co-workers also. They told them the same thing. To the maids that worked in the VOQ where I worked there, they told them the same thing, that I had left the Air Force and I had deserted the Air Force and I was in Cuba. That I had left for Cuba while they were holding me in incommunicado.
Okay. And what else did they do to your wife while you were locked up?
These 2 agents went to my house and they went to talk to my wife. They stayed there for 2 days or more, asking questions to her, interrogating her and bothering her and so forth, to the point that my wife had to cook for them, give them food and drinks, whatever they wanted to. And my wife said that when she couldn't even go to the bathroom, because when she went to the bathroom, one of them would go with her to the bathroom when she went to the bathroom. She said, I couldn't change the diapers to the babies. I couldn't do anything because they were there. In other words, they had to keep me under observation all the time. You know, I couldn't even get into the bathroom by myself, because they had to see me.
Let's fast forward a little bit here, because all of this information that we're talking about, folks are going to be able to read all about it in your upcoming book. But the Church Committee, which was officially known as the United States Senate Select Committee to Study Governmental Operations with Respect to Intelligence Activities, you used the Freedom of Information Act FOIA to secure over 1,000 documents about your case, and you spent many years, took 8 years to get a hold of these things with the help of some attorneys. You spent all these years, all these decades trying to bring this to the attention of the mainstream media, and what happened?
I wrote to many newspapers, many American newspapers. They sent me media. I sent copies of this document that I had received under the Freedom of Information Act, my own letters. I made my own statements, and I sent it to the newspaper. After the newspaper, I sent it to television stations. I even contacted some writers and people that wrote books and things like that, and I even traveled out of the state. I went to Minnesota, Florida, because I was living in Michigan at the time, and everything was negative. Nobody would touch it with a 10-foot pole. Nobody would do anything about it. Nobody wanted to write a piece of it in the newspaper, nothing. They just wouldn't touch it.
You also contacted politicians as well.
Oh, I also contacted politicians. I wrote to senators and representatives or anybody I could think of. And I sent them copies of the papers, what the papers stated, what the torture I had gone through, all the violations of my civil rights, my wife's civil rights, and the abuse that they committed against my children, and the conspiracy to cause harm to my wife and my children by the United States Air Force. It was all written down. It was written by them. I didn't write those things. They wrote it themselves. They were released under the Freedom of Information Act to me. So I used those paper to try to gain the attention of newspapers and also politicians, but nobody, not even one of them, paid any attention to me whatsoever. They just nothing. They just ignored me.
That, unfortunately, is typical of this pathetic mainstream media here in the United States. All of this and more is going to be in your book coming out next year, and I would encourage listeners, when it's available, to pick it up, read it, because here, not just a United States citizen, but a top-notch U.S. Air Force airman was kidnapped, detained, and tortured
on the false charges.
under full charges by the United States government here on the United States soil. This is probably going to be one of the most thoroughly documented cases ever to be introduced to the American reading public and, of course, the world reading public. And I'm very much looking forward to when your book comes out. Parmenio Iglesias, I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners. And I'm wishing you and your lovely wife and your family a wonderful holiday season and looking forward to talking to you real soon.
Well, the same thing to you and your wife and your family.